when you start to add sports psychology into your coaching, you go from coaching checkers to now you're coaching chess. You really just change the game once you start to bring in that psychology piece for your athlete.
Hi, Alexandra. It's my pleasure to have you on the Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself, that would be great.
Thanks, Dr. Alex. I'm happy to be here with you. My name is Alexandra Cacioppo. I'm a coach, CSCS and USAW. I'm currently a master's student working towards my PhD in applied physiology and kinesiology at the University of Florida, so go Gators. Goodness, I started out as a health and phys ed teacher. Goodness, when I graduated college back in 2010, and was a health and PE teacher for 11 years, and then got into training federal agents, football, American football, and Gen Pop CrossFit. And that's sort of my niche and my realm professionally right now.
So you have some ties with weightlifting. How would you describe that?
So I was introduced to weightlifting through CrossFit, like most people in their 20s. And I honestly didn't have a great coach. My coach saw that I was very strong, but not technical, and pushed me to chase weight rather than work on technique. And as somebody who's just competitive, I was chasing the weight. And I just really kind of avoided weightlifting because I wasn't good. We only like things that we're good at. So fast forward through those 10 years, I guess 12 years now, seven of those years I had cancer, three different types of cancer. And so after my hysterectomy and a pelvic floor split, my ability to recover and lift heavy as a traditional power lifter, my pelvic floor couldn't handle that compression. So it took a lot more time to recover than I thought I was really prepared for. And just kind of, you know, this mental fear, do I want to put that much pressure on my pelvic floor? So slowing it down and working on technique and just finding something else to get better at. The last 2 years, I've really gotten deep into Olympic lifting, focusing on technique, the psychology of it, and movement patterns to really just make people better at Olympic lifting, whether it's strength or speed, and understanding the individual athlete.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah, quite a history.
All right, so we will talk a little bit psychology today. I invited you to talk about the zones of optimal function in Olympic weightlifting, but before we can talk about it, could you just briefly explain how, well, we need some kind of definition, so...
Define it. Yeah, so the individual zones of optimal functioning were created by a researcher, Hannon, back in the 1980s. And what he had found was that each individual person is able to perform best at a certain level of arousal, attention, focus. And that if the attention is too low or too slow, your performance isn't at peak. And if the arousal and focus is too high, then you're also going to drop off on your performance as well. And so essentially seeing that there's relatively three zones of optimal function. One of them is actually being optimal and your Goldilocks zone. And then the other two kind of taper off the quality of performance.
Do you think we should discuss inverted U theory and catastrophe theory?
So the inverted U theory is exactly what it sounds like, an upside down U. And at that top of that hilltop is going to be your optimal zone of function. When I first started Olympic lifting, I remember getting myself so excited and hyped and amped up and elevating my arousal, because as a power lifter, this is what we do. People are slapping your back and, you know, you're getting this attention. And I realized Olympic lifting, I can't do that. My personality, I turn on jazz, piano jazz, and my friends wow. think it's so silly. But it's because I can heighten my sense of emotion, but when I do an Olympic lifting, that's when I start to fall off. So if I start to scale it back and I introduce these breathing techniques and limit my focus to one or two, three things to focus on before I lift rather than the totality of the lift, it helps create those individual zones of optimal function. And then the catastrophe theory is more of like a V instead of a U. So the inverted V for the catastrophe, you'll peak sooner for your optimal zone, but you'll also drop off even sooner, if that makes sense. So while the inverted U is a little more gradual, the catastrophe theory can demonstrate how certain personalities might have shorter zone spans, if that makes any sense.
Could we go in some kind of example? Maybe that would be something beneficial.
Yeah, so if we're talking, you know, just the clean and jerk, if you are a female and say you're just doing, you know, 75 pounds for a clean and jerk, oh, what is that in kilos? I'm talking about 30 kilos, you know, something on the lighter side, depending on your strength and your skill. Not going to be hard to manipulate. It might be some sort of warm up. It could even just be, you know, a 15 kilo empty barbell doesn't really matter, but you can manipulate the bar rather than having to rely on technique. So there's no real psychological push or threat or arousal because it's too low and you're too slow. So that would be the entry level zone of optimal function. Then as you get a little bit deeper into some of those percentages, maybe we're looking at like 75 to 85, maybe 90%. That's going to be more of your zone of optimal function. You're going to have great speed still. You're still hitting your technique, right? But then at some point in time, or depending on the day, it could be 75%, could be moving like 90%, right? We've had those days in Olympic lifting. And then once you get past that 90% or whatever that weight is, sometimes it's not a percentage and it's a psychological trigger of just a weight. So once we start to toggle that threshold, whatever that's going to be for performance, then we start to drop, right? So it's not always going to be necessarily a strength or speed or skill. It really comes down to psychological. And then you can break that down even more when you're working with the athlete. What were you thinking about? Or if you're reading their face and, you know, the subliminal details, how did you feel about that? What did you feel went wrong? Because I can see it on your face. I'll tell you what I saw, but what did you feel? And once you start checking in with them and you start to see their perception of where their mind is going for the barbell or the lift, that's when you can start to coach them to distract themselves from that focus to something that's going to lead them to success.
So what I'm hearing is two things. So one is what is going on objectively on the barbell. So what weight, how much of a challenge the weight is for the athlete. And the other is the mental game, what's going on in the head and how the athlete is perceiving what is on the bar and what is about to happen.
Absolutely.
All right. So how do we check? Is there a faster way than just 4 months observing your athlete and learning? Is there a faster way to see what is under, what is optimal, and what is above?
I think if you're paying attention, it probably takes about 2 weeks to really figure it out with that athlete. It doesn't take a whole lot of time. Same thing in comparison to any other skill or technique that you're working on. It probably takes you about 2 weeks to figure out a baseline as a coach for what their optimal zones are. But they're nonverbal and they're, you know, subjective cues. It's just being able to read somebody else's emotions. I also think it goes without, or it's important to say that the zones also change on the daily per person, right? It's not a one size fits all. And then whether you're coaching a professional athlete or a regular gen pop, you know, gym goer, then if you had a wonderful morning, you made it to work on time, your coffee was warm, it was paid for by the person in front of you, you didn't hit any single traffic lights, right? You've won the lottery in the morning. Your boss canceled the meeting and said what you delivered was great. Like, you've had the best day ever. When you go to train after that, you're going to be much more receptive for feedback in your training session because stress is so much lower. If you've had a fender bender, you were late for work, you spilled your coffee, your phone didn't charge, any other type of general stress, you're going to be less resilient and receptive to any feedback on your performance. And as a coach, understanding that on the daily and their general personality bias or tendencies is really going to dictate your ability to get through to them quickly.
It comes again to this theme I heard in previous interviews that coach is kind of a chameleon. So they have to adjust from person to person and also adjust to the same person depending on the day and the circumstances.
I completely agree with that. I don't think that's... I had said earlier today that when you start to add sports psychology into your coaching, you go from coaching checkers to now you're coaching chess. You really just change the game once you start to bring in that psychology piece for your athlete.
Should we go into creation of the zones?
Yeah.
Would you have some tips or structure how to mentally create the zones for a particular athlete?
I think first you should understand the barbell and the movement in general. Once you have relative proficiency in that, I think having experience on how you developed that technique and understanding then gives you the best ability to be empathetic on different personalities and how to create these zones. So I always see with type A personalities, as I'm a recovering type A, scale it down. So I think if you start to understand the temperament of the individual, you know, type A's, but if type B is the other one, and you know, and then say there's an ambivert, right? Some type of something in between and very situational. So if you're type A for certain things, you know, you have that predisposed heightened anxiety. So you're probably more likely to experience that catastrophic decline and have shorter optimal zones of function. So if you're creating optimal zones of function, their three zones might be much shorter in that V rather than in this longer shaped U, right? And that hilltop. I think if you're somewhere in the middle, you're probably going to have the most range for your three zones and still having the most range for that Goldilocks zone. If you're more of a relaxed type B, then, you know, your zones of optimal functioning can vary as well, or they could just be super elongated, right? Where the arousal takes a while to get there. And then you have a smooth sailing because nothing doesn't affect you. And then it slowly tapers off even more so. And I think if you have the general understanding of how that person is, and then there's questions to do that when you're taking athletes in. I know on my personal athlete application, I asked them, what to you is a good coach? So already asking them, how do you want me to be an integral part in your journey, performance, success? You know, sometimes a lot of them don't enjoy that immediate feedback. Let me know at the end of my session and give me a grade. Tell me what to work on after that. Other ones want it every single lift. Did you see the liftoff? Did you see the first pull, the first transition, the catch? I saw it all. And once you understand your athlete individually and can put them into one of those three categories, then the sliding scale of the zones, you know, transition through it.
So isn't that each person is all three zones? And now how fast do they move between too little to too much and through the optimal? How fast they move through, how long they can stay in each zone, or how long it takes them to build into optimal zone is dependent on them and on the day possibly too, and circumstances. So you may have an athlete that in the training they are fine and they build slowly and then they keep themselves here pretty nicely, doing great in training or working through problems, no problem, they push through. But at the competition, is it possible that the competition they will, I don't know, be different type? Is it possible?
Yeah, I mean, competing is a different beast. It's totally different once you're on that platform versus being on the platform in your gym. And understanding that external and environmental pressure, I think, is a huge factor that will change from those that are performing in a gym while training versus those that can compete. What your goal should be in these individual zones of optimal functioning is utilizing them for training, but ultimately preparing them for competition, right? If you've been on an Olympic lifting platform or a platform of any sort in competition, it's different when you're going to get white lights, red lights, all eyes are on you. Somebody changed the plates for you. You have 1 minute to hit that lift. Training athletes in that zone is a completely different skill than the training and practice individual zones of optimal functioning.
What else would be helpful, you think, for coaches to know?
Knowing the steps of learning and ability to create new habits is super important.
I like it.
So knowing that, you know, it's even though these are adults and while they're able to understand complex and coordinated movements, at the same time, you might have to treat them like a kindergartner because those neurological pathways could be the equivalent of a 5 or 6 year old. And so even though this person could be 26, 36, 46, 76, they might not be able to adapt as quickly as an adult in what you would think is coordinated movement pattern response for an adult and slow it down and treat the motor neurons like they are elementary and sophomore. And so once you can start to coach to the motor neurons first, then you'll get the psychology to catch up. Once you get to the psychology, that's when it comes to focus, right? The conscious brain can only focus on one thought at a time. So if a conscious brain can only focus on one thought at a time, you have split seconds in that lift to think of nothing. So how do you get them to approach that barbell with a conscious thought? And they can have more than one conscious thought, but how many can they have? Most people, we say 3. On average, 3. So if you have a mantra or a routine, like I always say for me, it's big belly breath, retract the lat, fast elbows, use the feet, wait for contact. Whatever those are, I just make it 3. And whatever that athlete needs for that day, whatever their brain is skipping or their motor neurons are just hyper-focused on, By focusing their internal attention, their mind on these three things, it then lets go of the pressure of hitting that one performance cue. And so any type of capacity to do that, if you're able to, then you're also able to build that for their zones of function in both training and competition. A lot of times breathing techniques, right? Counting up to five, up to 10, visualizing, right? Imagining yourself hitting that lift, not knowing the weight on the bar. How many of us have ever loaded that barbell with the smallest change plates and just said, keep going? We've all been there, right? Sometimes it's got to be like that. And sometimes there's going to be a person who responds well to that. All of us respond well to that at some certain weight, right? And that's when we can start to see that our zones of functioning is purely psychological and not actually physical.
That's true. So let's go through the example where, let's imagine it's a competition or important training, heavy training, the athlete supposed to hit big weight. And now let's go through two scenarios. So you see your athlete and they are in below, they are not in the optimal zone, both of them. In one example, they are below, the other example, they are above. Now, how as a coach would you bring this person here and this person here?
Well, man.
Sorry, of course, it depends on the person you have in front and hopefully what will work with this person. But maybe just some examples so people can broaden their library as we speak on this topic.
Yeah, so if you're trying to get somebody to heighten their arousal, I might ask them to overshoot their numbers with some pulls, right? With either snatch pulls or clean pulls. And I'm going to ask you to try and clean it. If you're under aroused, I might put you at 110%. And okay, if you think that you're in your optimal zone, pull it and show me you can pull it. And that's going to start to wake up their system a little bit more. Any type of challenge, I would say, is going to start to wake them up. Any type of shock to the system, so extreme heat or even extreme cold, right? If it's cold outside and you can get outside and run for, 10, 15 seconds and have that hit their system, that's going to start to awaken their arousal if they're understimulated. I don't recommend smelling salts. I've never used them, but I know it's something that you can use to create the arousal if you needed some sort of supplementation. Not always my go-to. Then if you're trying to get somebody back down from being in that catastrophic and falling off zone, that's where I'm going to start to give those breathing techniques. That's where I'm going to change the music that they're listening to. That's where I'm going to start to give them those focus points. That's when I'm going to start to tell them to distract themselves. Go read a book. Go call your mother. Yeah, call your mother. Call my mother. she'll relax you. But anything to take your focus off of the intensity of the situation so that way you can be successful.
Do we do anything to the listeners that are in the optimal zone or do we just leave them alone?
Let them coast. Let them be happy. They are Goldilocks. Let them rest.
All right. Could you summarize for coaches in 3 points or 3 tips what they should know about optimal zone of performance?
Don't overthink it. It's not as hard as you think it is. It's much more of an art than it is a science. So find that balance rather than assuming it's a completely strict algorithm. Don't ignore the fact that it is a science and there are algorithms and data points and tools that show success for people that have done the research and have participated in understanding how to create these zones. And then 3, I would say, don't be afraid to ask your athlete questions. Get to know them. The number one secret, that people think is a secret from me is, how do you relate to your athletes and know them so well? Ask them questions. Every time I see them, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, how are you? Aches, pains, anything I need to know about. Then I know who's traveling, who's got stress at work, whose car broke down, who had a flat tire. Don't be afraid to ask them questions when they come in. Don't just talk about the sports and the weather and what they ate. Get to know them as a human and you'll be able to cater to that human performance in the human performance aspect.
Excellent. 2 last questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
My favorite lift is the one that scares you, but you do it anyway. Whatever that number is, if it scares you and you do it anyway, that's my favorite lift.
All right. And the last question is, if people want to follow your work or connect with you, where they should find you online?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn, Alexandra Cacioppo, and then also on Instagram, coachcash.htk. And then you can also find my website linked through there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Alexandra. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Dr. Alex. I appreciate it.